Welcome back, everyone, to the Deep Dive. You know, we like to get into the really complex stuff here, and today's no exception. We're diving into the aerospace and defense supply chain.
Okay.
And specifically, some of the big challenges it's facing. And honestly, I think everyone's seen those headlines by now about the kind of pressure they're under.
Yeah.
Right? Like, we're talking record numbers. The International Air Transport Association, IAA, they're reporting a backlog like we've never seen. It's something like 17,000 new aircraft on back order. Just to give you a sense of how wild that is to work through that backlog at the current pace, it could take, get this, 14 years.
Oh, wow.
That's double the average from just a few years ago, like between 2013 and 2019. Now IATA's projecting things will speed up eventually. Okay. Yeah, they say delivery rates will get better, which should help shorten those wait times.
Right.
It's all detailed in the report. Supply chain issues continue to negatively impact airline performance into 2025. But I think looking at numbers like that, it really makes you wonder what's going on behind the scenes, like what's causing this kind of bottleneck.
Absolutely. I mean, these aren't just numbers on a page, right? These delays, this backlog, it has very real consequences for airlines, for the whole industry. Yeah, it's a huge challenge.
Exactly. And I think that's what we really want to unpack today. We're calling this a deep dive for a reason.
Yeah.
We're focusing in on one crucial aspect of all this. It's about visibility in the supply chain, or really the lack of it, and how companies are trying to manage risk in this environment.
Right.
And we want to go beyond just those big suppliers, the tier ones, and look at their own networks, their suppliers, what are called the sub-tiers.
Okay.
Now, we've been looking at this really interesting article from Aviation Maintenance Magazine, and it digs into this whole thing. And a voice that really stands out in the piece is Christopher Brumit. He's the managing director for aerospace and defense at Maine Pointe. Maine Pointe, for anyone who doesn't know, they're a global supply chain and operations consulting firm.
Yeah.
So they really specialize in helping companies streamline their supply chains and optimize their operations.
Yeah, I mean, this is a web, right? It's so interconnected. Like you said, 17,000 aircraft waiting. That means suppliers and manufacturers all depending on each other. A complex network, global even. And as the article points out, if there's a snag, a disruption anywhere in that chain, well, the impact is huge. You get this ripple effect throughout the whole system.
Yeah, exactly. So our mission, if you will, for this deep dive is to understand why the aerospace supply chain is so vulnerable right now. What are those specific problems coming from this lack of visibility, especially at the sub-tier level? And what are some solutions being discussed? That's what we're going to explore based on this Aviation Maintenance Magazine piece.
Sounds good.
So let's jump right in. This whole visibility problem, as they call it, the article argues that aerospace and defense is especially susceptible to disruptions. Why is that? Well, for one thing, the products themselves are incredibly complex, and the quality and safety standards, they're sky high. So much depends on these highly specialized parts, specialized manufacturing processes. If something goes wrong, it's not like you can just grab a replacement off the shelf. Like, picture this, right? There's a delay for some tiny part. You'd think it's no big deal. But that little $5 component could hold up the entire assembly of an aircraft worth millions. That's the kind of fragility we're talking about.
Absolutely. And I think the article makes a great point about the consequences of this poor visibility.
Yeah.
You get reduced supply quality, which in this industry is just unacceptable.
Yeah.
Delivery schedules become completely unpredictable. Lead times, well, we've seen some improvement recently, but they're still very long. So you can imagine, right? One delay leads to another, and it just snowballs. The whole production process is affected.
Yeah, this domino effect, it's scary.
It is. It really highlights the importance of that transparency throughout the supply chain.
And there's this dynamic, right, that the article mentions about OEMs, original equipment manufacturers, and the defense primes. Their focus, understandably, starts with their tier one suppliers.
Right.
Those are the companies providing those big, expensive, super complicated systems, things like landing gear, the avionics, the engines. Those are the heart of the aircraft. Makes sense that oversight starts there.
Absolutely. They're the most visible, the ones with the most direct impact on production.
But here's where things get interesting, and this is where the article really digs deep. These tier one suppliers, they don't make everything themselves. They rely on this whole network, a huge network of sub-tier suppliers for all kinds of parts, all the components that go into those massive systems. And that's where the visibility for the OEMs starts to get blurry.
It does. It becomes much more challenging to track what's happening further down the chain.
The article really emphasizes how crucial these sub-tier suppliers are, even though they might be individually smaller. Collectively, they're the ones providing all those thousands of sub-assemblies and individual parts that ultimately become those big tier one systems. And they might not always have the same level of, let's say, sophistication when it comes to managing their production and responding to demand.
It's a real challenge. And for the OEMs, getting that direct access, that insight into those sub-tier operations, well, it's not always easy. The article even mentions privity clauses.
Privy clauses.
Yeah, that can be a real roadblock.
Yeah.
Basically, they're contractual agreements that legally restrict direct access to information or even communication between the OEM and those lower tier suppliers.
Mm-hmm.
So the OEM might have a really good handle on their tier ones, but when it comes to the health and stability of the entire chain further down, they're often in the dark.
So it's like a blind spot in the system.
Exactly.
And what about what they're already doing, the OEMs and primes? I mean, the article talks about their existing systems, like for supplier quality and vendor management, things like structured production readiness processes. Are those not working?
Well, the article suggests those systems, while they're there, are running into some limitations. Several reasons, actually. For one, the sheer number of suppliers. It's overwhelming.
Oh, I bet.
And all the assessments that have to be done annually, well, it can lead to what they call, and I love this term, pencil whipping.
Pencil whipping. Okay, what's that?
Basically, it means the evaluations become superficial. People just going through the motions, copying, pasting information, maybe just to meet some quota. The pressure to get all those audits done, well, it can sacrifice the quality of the oversight, the real scrutiny of the supplier's readiness. So you get this false sense of security. The pressure to check boxes overshadows genuine oversight.
So quantity over quality. Not good.
Not at all. And the article talks about another approach, this sort of temporary fix. You know, where OEMs, even tier ones themselves, they send their own people to the supplier's facility to directly fix problems. It's like firefighting.
Reactive, not proactive.
Exactly. And while it can work in the short term, right, you might see improvement in quality, production might pick up. But the article points out it's expensive. And once those support teams leave, the underlying issues, the root causes, they haven't been solved. So things revert back. And they ask a great question. Why does this keep happening? Why is this the pattern?
And their answer.
No clear methodology. It's not just about spotting the problem. It's about tracing it back to its source, figuring out the root cause, agreeing on a solution, making real operational changes with clear KPIs, and then training people, making sure those changes stick. And the article makes another good point. This kind of intensive intervention, it's usually reserved for the suppliers of the most critical parts. So you've got a whole bunch of other sub-tier suppliers who aren't getting that kind of attention. They're flying under the radar. It's a band-aid, not a cure. They miss the big picture.
So it's a systemic problem, not just isolated incidents.
Right. And that brings us to another challenge the article highlights, communication and data.
Okay.
This breakdown in communication, it seems to be frustrating everyone. OEMs are struggling because they're not getting clear information from their tier ones about what's going on with the sub-tiers. And then those sub-tiers, they're frustrated because they're not getting clear signals about demand from their customers.
A recipe for disaster. Everyone's in the dark and nobody's happy.
It's a mess. And the article specifically mentions the struggles of the smaller guys, the tier two and tier three suppliers. They often just don't have the resources, the financial resources, to invest in better systems, or the flexibility to scale their production up and down as demand from the OEMs changes. That volatility can be really hard to manage when you're a smaller outfit.
Yeah, you need some predictability to plan effectively.
Absolutely. And then on top of all that, you've got this whole other problem, poor data management. The article talks about how everyone's using different systems, different ERPs, enterprise resource planning systems. Some are still using spreadsheets. So there's no single source of truth. You can't easily share accurate information across the supply chain.
It's like a game of telephone, but with data.
Yeah.
And nobody's getting the right message.
Exactly. So you've got different players, different data, confusion, and a lack of trust. And the article argues that this disconnect feeds a negative cycle. OEMs lose confidence in their suppliers' ability to deliver. And that just exacerbates the problem.
So how do you break this cycle? Because it sounds like if you're not careful, this whole thing can spiral out of control.
It can. And the article talks about this downward spiral where unchecked quality issues and production problems lead to huge costs for everyone. They call it COPQ, cost of poor quality.
Okay, so what's the solution? What can these companies do?
The article lays out a few key elements of a really strong supplier performance program.
Okay.
Things that OEMs should be doing. You've got to consolidate all that supplier data into one central system. You need clear risk rankings for all your suppliers, and you need in-depth analysis of all the critical parts. and then really clear criteria for deciding which sub-tier suppliers need the most attention. It's about moving beyond just basic checklists and those production readiness assessments, getting into the nitty-gritty.
So getting a more complete picture, a more accurate view of the whole landscape.
Precisely. And the big shift, they argue, is moving away from just reacting to problems. You need to be proactive, identifying potential risks, and eventually becoming predictive when it comes to supplier quality. They actually outline a whole supplier risk and quality assurance process to achieve this.
Okay, that sounds interesting. Let's break that down. They mentioned developing a risk and capabilities matrix, ideally with some digital tools to manage it. What's the thinking behind that?
It's about mapping out all the risks, the potential risks associated with each supplier. You look at their capabilities, how critical the parts they provide are. And using digital tools allows you to analyze all that data in real time. You get a much more dynamic and up-to-date picture of the risk across your supply chain.
So you can actually see where the vulnerabilities are?
Exactly. And then the article talks about really analyzing and refining the data you already have. It's about making sure you're focusing your attention and resources where they'll have the biggest impact.
Prioritization.
Exactly. You also need to know how many of those supplier issues are actually originating with the sub-tiers. You can't fix a problem if you don't know where it's coming from.
Yeah.
And then communication is key. You got to have a clear strategy for how you're going to engage with those sub-tier suppliers, prepare them for assessments, build that trust, foster cooperation.
Right. You can't just barge in and expect them to open up their books.
Absolutely. Transparency and trust are crucial. And the article goes on to emphasize consolidating all that data you've gathered, risk rankings, critical parts analysis, all of it. So you can pinpoint the highest priority sub-tier suppliers for those initial on-site assessments. They call it wave one. Very strategic, very targeted.
So it's like a phased approach. You're not trying to boil the ocean.
Exactly. And then you work with the suppliers to develop a rollout plan.
Okay.
Figure out the timing, the logistics, how to best initiate the process with each of them. It's got to be a collaborative effort to really work. And finally, you do a deep dive on each supplier. Analyze their quality systems, their capabilities, their capacity, their metrics, their KPIs, everything. Really get a thorough understanding of their strengths and weaknesses.
So this is a pretty comprehensive, data-driven approach to managing risk across the whole supply chain, not just at the tier one level.
It is. It's about getting a more holistic view.
Yeah.
And while the benefits for the OEMs and tier ones are clear, right?
Uh-huh.
You get a better predictability, lower risk. But the article makes a great point about the impact on the sub-tier suppliers. Mm. It could be even more significant for them.
Oh, that's interesting. How so? I mean, these are often smaller companies. They've got fewer resources.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And many of them, as we talked about, are constantly dealing with labor shortages, material costs fluctuating, all that. So if you can bring them closer to the OEMs, give them more visibility, clearer communication, predictable demand signals.
You're creating a more stable environment for them to operate in.
You are. And that can lead to better planning, less waste, and ultimately higher profitability. It benefits the entire supply chain from top to bottom.
It's a win-win. Everybody benefits from a healthier ecosystem.
Right.
And this is where the article brings in Christopher Brumit's expertise. He's that managing director from Mainpoint. They highlight his 30-year track record working with aerospace and defense companies. He's helped them improve their operations, boost growth, optimize procurement and logistics, enhance their supply chains, all of that. It really shows that this approach, this holistic approach, is crucial for achieving those bigger strategic goals.
Absolutely. His experience underscores the point that focusing on sub-tier visibility isn't just a nice to have. It's essential. It's the foundation for a strong, stable supply chain in the future.
So, looking back at everything we've talked about, it's pretty clear that the aerospace and defense supply chain is facing some serious headwinds.
It is.
And that lack of visibility, especially at those sub-tier levels, it can really create a domino effect of problems. So the shift to more proactive, more predictive strategies for supplier quality, that's not optional. It's necessary.
It's the way forward. And it all comes down to improving communication, making sure the data is accurate and reliable, and having a really structured, comprehensive way to assess risk and help those suppliers at every level of the chain develop and improve.
It's about creating a system where everybody has a clear picture of what needs to be done.
So it's not just about technology. It's about collaboration, about transparency, and about building trust.
Couldn't have said better myself. It really does make you think, right? What are the truly innovative solutions we need in the long term to really change the game? To make the global aerospace and defense supply chain not just resilient, but super efficient? What role can cutting-edge technology play? What about entirely new ways of collaborating? Are there fundamental shifts in how we think about operations that are needed? It's a fascinating and absolutely crucial area to keep exploring. And if you're interested in going deeper, you know I always say this, check out Aviation Maintenance Magazine. They've got a lot of great articles on this and related topics. Thanks for joining us for this deep dive. We'll see you next time.